to Season 7, Episode 19 of the Ubuntu Podcast. It's Wednesday the 6th of August, and we're going to discuss what's been happening in the news and in the Ubuntu community. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat thing on the website and in the #UUPCIRC channel. I'm Tony, and joining me this week, well, all four of us are back in the house. We are here today. Joining me is Alan.
Hi, Tony.
How are you doing, Alan?
Fine.
Good. Excellent. You look fine.
Thank you. I am fine. Yes, everything's cool and fab and groovy.
You're wearing an Obcamp t-shirt today.
I am.
It's looking very nice on you.
Yes, thank you.
Also is Mark.
Hello.
How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing quite well. It's quite warm.
It's quite muggy.
Mm. I didn't think it was going to be sunny today, so I wore trousers. That was a mistake.
Yeah, I prefer it when you don't wear trousers.
I'm quite glad you're wearing trousers.
I think it's a minimum standard we expect on the Ubuntu podcast is people wearing trousers.
I think you've gone overboard with the tuxedo this week, though, Tony. Maybe that's why you're a little bit hot.
Yeah, hopefully the cummerbund makes up for it.
Yes.
And then Laura, hello.
Hello.
Now, this is a bit weird. Everything's the wrong way around.
Yep.
So I'm on this side of the room, you're on that side of the room. What's going on?
I'm driving the desk today.
Cool.
So nobody noticed. It was seamless.
He said to leave that alone.
Oh, now we're going to have an argument. Okay. Is this the full half hour? Just 5 minutes.
Look, I have control of your microphone.
This is true.
The power balance has shifted noticeably in the podcast.
But we're all back, so that's good.
Hey, did you have a nice holiday?
Yeah, I'll talk about that another time.
Okay, yeah, let's talk about that later. Right, should we get on with the news?
Okay.
All right. So here is the news, and our first item on the news docket, which apparently is the way we say it these days.
You've been listening to the Linux Action Show, haven't you?
Apparently, yes, from the past, some Gnore companies have joined the Linux Foundation.
Wow, are these big name corporate bodies that
they
we're all
certainly
familiar
are.
With?
You prepare yourself for these big name companies joining.
My ears are metaphorically pinned back.
The Linux Foundation members who are leveraging the global Linux growth. That's what they're doing, these companies.
Well, that's handy.
Yeah. You ready?
Yeah, I do think it needed some leverage.
The popular, of course, management and technology consultants, Bearing Point. Well done, Bearing Point, for joining the Linux Foundation.
Yeah, I seem to remember. No, I don't.
No. There's also the development and consulting. They're really like popular and heavily used consulting, cloud consulting people. Danix.
Yeah, I think I had that for a rash once.
Sistina? Something like that. I didn't even write down what they do. Obviously, the one that you've all heard of, Linaro.
Ah.
Okay, I think I've heard of Linaro, but I couldn't tell you what they do.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that's great, isn't it? All these more companies supporting. It's obviously good people putting their money into the Linux Foundation to help support Linux development. You know, you've got Linux Foundation, they pay for Linus Torvalds' salary, don't they?
Yes. Yeah.
So is his salary getting bigger all the time when he's joining, do you think?
I think probably not.
Oh.
I would imagine that he doesn't really, you know, need a huge amount of money. He doesn't seem to live a particularly lavish lifestyle. No, there was a video.
Did you just see the video? With his walking desk.
Yeah, he's got a walking desk with his PC on there, and he's got a desk next to that which is just covered in rubbish.
Yeah,
and a couple of computers. He doesn't seem to be
remind you of anyone?
Wanting for much. Yeah, but I haven't been to Tony's house for a while, so I couldn't, tell you if it's still like that.
I don't remember seeing a walking desk at Alan's the last time I was there.
You should go on.
Well, yeah, maybe. I did consider it for a very short period of time.
Was it the same way as the Brompton?
Yes.
Did you consider it until you had to realise you had to walk to the walking desk shop and then thought that was
no, it was that I had to walk to the walking desk. But the problem, once I get it, you know, it's like, oh, God. Yeah. So that's good news. Good news.
Yeah. I mean, it's always good to have more companies putting money into something they are not contractually obliged to do to help it grow, even if we've not heard of them. You know, maybe now. Well, now we have.
Yep.
Yep.
And now we're going to remember their names.
Yep.
There'll be a test.
And yeah, the quiz at Christmas.
Pressed the button too early.
The quiz at Christmas. Well, I think that was a good idea. We'll be name the four companies that joined in episode 19.
Bagsy, yes. Linaro.
Leave that.
Right. Okay, Mark, what's the next news item?
The Groupon. Well-known discount voucher site have launched a piece of software called Gnome.
Oh, great.
Is it a desktop that looks like it's from the 1990s?
No, it's some kind of...
No, that's Marte.
It's more on that later. It's some kind of device which companies can buy, which has this software on which basically allows them to accept Groupons more easily, as I understand
it. Sort of a bit of a management console or something for companies wanting to have offers on the site.
Yes, so this thing is called the Groupon Gnome, and it's said to be running Gnome software. Which the Gnome Software Foundation are not too happy about by the sound of it.
Well, I'd imagine so, yes. I'm sure we would be very upset if people started making software called Unity, you know.
Do Gnome Foundation have a trademark?
I believe they do, yes. So they are exploring legal venues, but cannot be more specific because of that.
I'd imagine they're exploring legal avenues myself.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
You know, legal venues might be good if they're going to have a party or something. Mm,
I think I copied and pasted that from the list. That's interesting. Yeah, maybe they're deciding whether they should sue them in Texas or somewhere else, depending on the laws.
Yeah. Maybe the joke's on us.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yes, perhaps it was meant to say avenues.
Well, you know, it makes sense because, you know, it could be easily confused, I guess.
Yeah.
And more importantly, if they don't defend the trademark now, then if someone else came up and said, our software's called Gnome.
Careful. You'll get people coming after you saying that that's not true.
Will I?
Yeah. Not me, though.
Okay.
Well,
okay.
It's the start of the Gnome Wars.
So
the next episode of Star Wars franchise.
So Mozilla has disclosed that a data sanitization process has been failing to run on its developer network database, and that means that 76,000 user email addresses and 4,000 users hashed passwords have been disclosed.
Whoopsie.
Not good. Mm.
They're looking at how not to do it in future.
What's this data sanitization process for? Why are they... What's being sanitized or what's not being sanitized? Well, clearly email addresses and hash passwords are the things that are not being sanitized because they've leaked. Yeah. I'm guessing, I don't know, I haven't looked at this, but I assume it's...
It's
some...
It's a segment of let's speculate what the headmark line means.
Yeah. Well, you know, we do this at places I've worked at before where you copy a production system to a test system for doing testing, but you don't want real live data, but you want data, not like actual data.
You want real data.
You want real data, but you've got to sanitize it. So in the process of copying production back to some other system, you cleanse the data in some way. And
I mean, they said that this data was available on a public server. They didn't really specify much more than that in the announcement. But they're getting in touch with the users who are affected, and especially the ones who had their username, their hashed password and their email address leaked. They're being advised that they might want to change their passwords on other sites too.
Mm. Yeah, but. They shouldn't need to because nobody uses the same password on multiple sites, do they?
No.
We've learned that lesson now.
Yeah.
Haven't we?
I mean, it's unfortunate, you know, but these things happen. It seems to be like every week there's some kind of disclosure or problem with someone leaking something and whoops.
They do seem to have handled it really well. They've just been up front and said, this is what happened, this is what was leaked, this is why and what we're going to do about it.
Yeah. And they didn't say we take security very seriously, which I was quite pleased with.
Is that it? Is that the line that gets you every press release?
Yes.
We take security very seriously. Here's an example of how we haven't done it.
We didn't do that.
That's why we emailed you your password in plain text.
I think the unfortunate thing actually is that they now get added to this like canon list of sites which have leaked, you know, email addresses and hash passwords. So now when you go to one of these, you know, lists, it will be there for a very long time. Like they'll get put up there with, you know, Gawker and Adobe and
LinkedIn
and Yahoo and all these others who've had leaks. So, you know, it's not a nice club to be in, really, is it? To be fair.
No, maybe, I suppose not.
Maybe they could ask Google to remove it from the search results.
Ooh. Topical.
Mm.
And EtherCalc, which is an open source collaborative spreadsheet tool, has been released. It's a web-based thingy where you can drag and drop Excel spreadsheets and other similar open...
I think you mean LibreOffice spreadsheets.
Well, you can do Excel spreadsheets.
Oh, right, okay.
You can drag and drop them onto it as well as, I'm sure, all
of the
available...
Sorry, you just drag and drop them into a web page?
Yeah, it's weird.
Wow. I didn't try that. I just made a new one.
Well, there you go. If you look at the bit where it says drag and drop...
We should have read the
your...
article, Mark.
Yeah.
anyway, it's based on the Social Calc JavaScript spreadsheet, which was originally written by VisiCalc developer Daniel Bricklin. It uses Node.js on the back end, for those of you who know what that sort of thing is, and exports to CSV and HTML. So you could argue it's a bit of a substitute maybe for Google spreadsheets if you don't want to give your data to Google.
Get that integrated into something like OwnCloud.
Absolutely, yeah. I did. I had a thing when I first started doing my OwnCloud setup. I had a Drupal installation which used Social Calc so that I could have online spreadsheets on that. Which was massively hacky, but actually somehow worked, but it didn't do the collaborative thing. So this is really cool that you can do collaborative spreadsheets. It could do with a bit of an interface refresh, I must say. All of the icons are sort of, you know, grey and white.
It reminds me of running...
VisiCalc?
Well, I was going to say Lotus 1-2-3, but yeah. I mean, it amazes me that the spreadsheets are still so core to business functionality these days. Like when I first started in computing, my very first job in 1988 or so, these computers that weren't PCs. They were like they were the form factor PCs, and yeah, had floppy disks and hard drives and all that. But they would run things like Lotus 1-2-3 and As Easy As 1-2-3, which came out a little while later as a shareware ripoff of Lotus 1-2-3. And the fact that we're still using that same grid system of cells with formulas and links. And, you know, okay, we've got collaboration here and we've got the ability to drag and drop and share and, you know, collaborate with people around the world. But it amazes me that we're still so reliant on, you know, data in little boxes.
Yeah, it is a fantastic tool that was designed, you know, years and years ago based on chalkboards. And it's still, there's got to be a better way to do it, but it seems to be a...
I don't know if there is, because everyone keeps trying it. Like, you know, in previous work life, we would try and replace spreadsheets with a business warehouse system and put all the data into that. But then, you know, people found that too difficult to use and they end up creating a spreadsheet to do the work, you know.
Yeah.
And my father-in-law works for a company that make microwave ovens, and he regales stories of how he's created this amazing Excel spreadsheet, you know, that saved the business, you know, however many hundreds of thousands of pounds. And yeah, just amazing. Awesome.
Powerful things.
Moving on. The EFF have created a password manager called...
No. They didn't create it.
Oh, okay.
A company created it, who are being bought by Twitter. Anyway, carry on.
All right. So there's a password manager that someone made that the EFF really like.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that better?
That's the story, yeah.
Okay. And it's called Mitro?
Something like that.
Mitro. Open source, part of the company's acquisition by Twitter. Awesome.
Yeah.
It's got a browser extension currently for Firefox and Safari. So could we say that it's aimed at Mac users, maybe? And a back-end server which runs on Java and Postgres. Does that run locally on your local machine, or is that a back-end server that runs
somewhere
else?
So you have a server somewhere online, and then you have the browser extension on all your
right.
stuff. Like with LastPass, except you can run your own server.
Sweet. And it's all on GitHub, and encryption happens locally, so you don't end up sending unencrypted passwords over the wire.
Mm-hmm.
Sweet.
Yeah,
that sounds awesome. Cool. Awesome replacement for LastPass.
It'd be good. I mean, the thing that keeps me with LastPass is the fact that it works everywhere. So you've got extension for every browser, and it's on Android, and it's just like really easy. So if they can get the if their open sourcing of this means that people are going to develop extensions for other browsers, then this is really awesome.
Yeah,
yeah, it's a good idea.
Or even not just browser extensions. It could just be a standalone, like silo app that you
like
could carry around on your phone or something. Yeah. Like KeePass, that kind of thing. Yeah. That'd be ideal. Yeah.
From version 14, XBMC will be renamed to Kodi.
Why?
Because XBMC originally called Xbox Media Player, and then it was Xbox Media Center because it ran on an Xbox.
Right. The original Xbox.
Xbox.
Yeah.
And then they ported it to other platforms, and they realized that calling it Xbox Media Center was A, not entirely accurate, and B, probably a trademark violation.
Right.
So they changed it to XBMC, and since then it's been called XBMC. But that's caused various issues with them not being necessarily be able to protect their name in the ways that they'd like to be able to.
Oh, this is when people sell boxes running XBMC that are hacked up and they're not, you know.
Yes, and people, you know, people making software which is, you know, like an XBMC remote, even though it's not an official thing from the XBMC Foundation. Mm. So I think they're basically hoping that this will give them a new trademarked name which they have better control over.
Right.
And they're taking the Mozilla Foundation's policies over with the same way they use their trademarks. So the people are able to use them as long as they are using it for Kodi, not for.
So does this mean there won't be a Kodi package in Debian? It'll be rebranded something else. If they're using the Mozilla trademark policy, then I would imagine Debian and other distros will have some kind of ICE-D or something.
Something like that. Oh, and it's also being changed. It's not going to be Kodi Media Center. It's going to be Kodi Entertainment Center.
Okay.
Because it's not just media anymore.
Sounds funky.
It's a shame it's a rubbish name.
Okay.
I think we should probably move on to the gaming news.
Oh, yes, Tony, gaming news, go!
Okay, gaming news. Ooh, I see my microphone's giving out on me just because I get into the gaming news.
Yeah, you better be quick then.
It's because you're so excited.
My raison d'etre. So GOG.com have now added Linux support for over 50 games in the DRM-free catalogue.
That's awesome. Good news.
Yeah, apparently. There are about...
Wow.
There's a 50-50 split between games with existing Linux ports and first-time-on-Linux releases, which appear to be DOS games, which are presumably wrapped in a Linux version of DOSBox instead of Windows.
Yeah, so they had a load of their old games were DOS games, which were wrapped in DOSBox.
Hang on, Tony can tell us this.
Oh, yeah.
Well, no, come on, Mark.
Oh, all right, okay.
Let's let the young whippersnapper have his moment.
Okay.
Go on then, Mark.
Yeah, so some of them you could get running on Linux just by buying them and downloading them, and because they were DRM-free, you just whipped out the Windows version of DOSBox and stuck in the Linux one and they worked. So presumably now
they've just
done that and they support it.
Nice.
And if it doesn't work, then you get your money back. Because they've got a 30-day money-back guarantee.
And the supported distros are?
Ubuntu 14.04 LTS, so that's effectively the current version of Ubuntu, and Linux Mint 17.
Groovy.
So, you know, good awesome. Modern releases. So, that's the end of the gaming news.
The Ubuntu podcast needs you. Yes, you. If you hear something that pleases, puzzles, or piques you, tweet us at UUPC or email podcast@ubuntu-uk.org. You can also talk to us on the telephone, Skype, Facebook, and Google+. Find links to all these places on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org. And remember, if we don't hear from you, we might not have enough content, and that can only mean one thing, more quizzes.
And now it's time for some community news. Ubuntu is to get faster positioning services through Nokia Here Maps. The technology uses...
Where?
Here Maps. The technology
It has to be shouted. It's in uppercase, you see.
Data about signal strength of Wi-Fi and mobile stations to augment the phone's GPS data.
So this is like what Google already does?
Yep, like everyone, all other phones do.
Right, okay. And now Ubuntu's going to do it.
Yes, we've got to deal with Nokia. They're going to provide the AGPS bit that we put on the phone.
Right.
Job done.
So this is interesting because Ubuntu, in the form of Canonical, presumably have done a deal with Nokia, who are now owned by Microsoft.
No. Not all of Nokia is owned by Microsoft. The smartphoney bit is owned by Microsoft,
okay,
but not the bit that does Nokia Here. So nothing to do with Microsoft, separate business entity. It's all part of Nokia, nothing to do with them in Redmond.
Right.
Shall we just get that clear?
Yes. So, well, it's one of the frequently asked questions. Yeah. Everybody asks, oh, I'm not happy about this. That means Canonical are on the side of Microsoft. Well, no, it doesn't, because it isn't.
It doesn't, but they are. But that's just...
Well, yeah. That aside,
yeah.
So what the bit they're putting on the phone, what actually is that?
It's
a piece of software?
It's a piece of software.
Is it open
source? Unfortunately not. It's a binary blob. We did try very hard to get them to allow us to open source it. We did, I promise.
Well, they are Microsoft, no.
Good one. So, you know, it's a blob that will reduce the time to get a fix.
Right.
So that, and the good thing is that, I mean, there's going to be a Nokia Here like app.
Yeah.
But every app can benefit from it.
Cool.
So if you make an OpenStreetMap or a Google Maps variant or your own, you know, funky Mark Maps or whatever, you can use the location service on the phone, and the location service will use the Nokia bit, which is quite nice, I think.
So is that's it going right to be like it, so in Android you have the option to say, you know, I want to use just the GPS or I want to use the GPS and other data. Is that going to be the same sort of thing?
I believe so, yeah.
So
I think the switches are already there, but they're not hooked up to anything.
Brilliant.
Good stuff. Okay, and Ubuntu 14.10, also known as the Utopic Unicorn, has reached its second alpha.
Golly gosh.
Ooh. Yeah, so as always, these are very exciting moments in the Ubuntu community.
Yes.
When everybody goes, it's broken. Well, yes, it's an alpha release.
Actually, not so much. 14.10's been pretty stable for the whole cycle. I've not had any
broken stuff. Are you running it now?
Not on this laptop.
Oh.
The ones in my bag and on my phone and my tablet, yes.
Oh,
okay. Well, there are alpha images for Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Ubuntu GNOME, Ubuntu Kylin, and Ubuntu Cloud.
It's chilling. Ubuntu chilling.
It's just cooling, relaxing.
Yes. That's the Chinese variant.
Relaxing, it's relaxing, good. Real cool.
Chilin or Chilin or something like that. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Cool.
Display my cultural ignorance there. I do apologise.
No, that's fine.
Right,
happens often.
So support for GTK apps running on Mir has landed in the Utopic proposed.
Ooh.
Yeah. So all that, you know, that brouhaha when Mir was first released. I won't be able to run my apps because they need X and yada, yada, yada. Well, they need a toolkit. And now we've got rudimentary support for GTK apps in Mir.
There's quite a few bugs, I think, still at the moment.
Yeah, there are some significant ones. Like, it doesn't support cursors other than arrows. So if you're in a word processor, it doesn't change to the bar when you're typing and stuff like that.
Okay. Right.
But, I mean, this is fairly early on.
Yeah.
It's not... The switch to Mir isn't planned until, or fully planned until 16.04. So you've got another 18 months to get it working.
Fair enough.
It's all fine.
And finally... community blogger Lewis D'Souza has blogged about his experience talking to the UK Information Commissioner's Office about the legality of the Ubuntu shopping lens.
Oh, is this a legal controversy then?
Well, he's complained in the past, and you know he's lobbied for more information about the legality and the process around the dash that searches for products and services as well as applications. And he's blogged a bit about that in the past. And he's gone quiet. He hasn't mentioned anything for a while. And then suddenly he's blogged today. Just saw it where he details how he contacted the UK Information Commissioner's Office to find out if what Canonical were doing with the dash search for products was legal.
And is it?
Well, they say yes.
Oh, okay.
So he says, you know, he gives a good write-up, and it's worth a read. It talks about the timeline of, you know, how long it took to get replies and all that kind of stuff. And he posts verbatim the letter he got from the ICO.
Cool.
And at the end, he says, I'll continue to use Ubuntu with that lens switched off, which is like...
It's progressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the end of the community news.
So we've got some events to talk about now.
Yes.
First one to talk about is Wikimania, which is a 2,000...
Sounds wacky.
It's wiki and wacky and wonderful and wild. It's a 2,000-person conference, festival, meetup, workshop, hackathon, and celebration spread over 5 days in August 2014.
Wow.
There are 3 days, 200 talks, and it's only £50, which is still pretty
That's
good
pretty
value.
Good. Yeah.
Whether it's 3 or 5 days. The main event itself... is held in and around the Barbican Centre in London. So that's the place where you get to and then can't find anything.
Because it's a maze.
A horrible, horrible place.
Yes.
In London.
I'm sure it'll be well documented on the wiki.
More seal of approval there.
Yes. Yeah.
Once you go in there, you never find the way out. All are welcome, whether you're an expert, enthusiast, beginner, or just curious about Wikipedia, how it is, what it does, why it works, and how it can be improved for the future.
Cool.
And we have another event on the 4th and 5th of October.
What's that then?
In Oxford, in the UK. It's a free culture unconference called OgCamp.
Ah, I've heard of it.
Yes, you should. You've been to all of them. And if you want to know more, go to ogcamp.org for information and tickets. If you're interested in helping out organising the event, get in touch. The best person to speak to about helping organising is Les Pounder. He's on Twitter, Big Les P. And we're looking, as well as crew and people to help out, we're also looking for sponsors.
Yes. So if you are interested in peddling your wares to 300 geeks and the listeners of this show and so on, then get in touch. The details are on the website. I should mention our current sponsors. We have Ubuntu, supported by Canonical.
Yes.
We have Linux Voice, the magazine that gives back to the free software community.
This is a prime example of them giving back to the community.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Yep.
And they're going to be there exhibiting and selling stuff. They're not sure what yet, but they're going to have a stand. And the Odd Camp community, through Pay What You Want ticket donations, are a silver sponsor. Cool. And yes, I'm going to hopefully be announcing some other stuff in terms of speakers and exhibitors later this week. We've got a load of really cool stuff lined up for the Open Hardware Jam and some cool talks lined up. It's looking really good.
Awesome. Yes. Looking forward to that.
So it's only 2 months away.
Crikey.
Get your tickets now.
That's the end of the event.
That's all for episode 19. We will be back next week when we're going to be having a big, long chat about a controversial subject. If you would like to take any guesses what that might be, we can
carry on listening if you're listening live.
That's true, yes. If you're listening live, we'll be back in 5 seconds. We'll also have a command line love and some feedback. So we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Cheers then.
Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.